Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Impact Lab podcast. I'm joined today by a special friend of mine. He's not special, he's just great. Steve, who is the founder of Furthermore, an agency, a product and graphic design agency I've worked with in the past. They've been incredible for us, like really, really awesome. Steve, how you doing, mate?
I'm good. It's nice to see you after all these years.
It has been many, many years, actually, yeah. Like 10 years or something.
Probably 10, yeah.
So before we start, as is tradition, we are going to do the reverse Turing test. So the question will be, when we worked together, where was my office based? And you will say, where was it?
Wimbledon. Yeah.
Cool. So that's the answer to the reverse Turing test. You can check that we are real human beings by going to the show notes and making sure that the reverse Turing test matches. Steve, for those who don't know you as well as I do, please take a minute to introduce yourself and what you do.
Sure. So, yeah, I'm the founder of Furthermore, and actually also the founder of a walking app called Go Jauntly. So I kind of have two businesses. On the Furthermore side, we're a product and service design studio. We describe ourselves as evidence-led product and service design studio. And we were founded in 2013 in London. And recent clients include kind of Harvard and Chelsea Football Club, data.org, AGBI in the golf, actually. So lots of different varied mix of publishers, nonprofits. Lots of different things, really. And I'm the founder. My background's in UX. My team's designers, researchers, and UXers. So it's great to be on here.
How much time do you spend sort of still doing, let's say, real work versus leading the company?
A great question. I spend probably about 50-50, and it's not as much as I'd like to just be leading the company. You know, we're still small, which is fun, but I still get to my hands dirty and still get to get involved in design. I'm feeding back every day on things that the team created. So really hands on. I think that's one of the things actually that the clients love, because they quite often, you know, they get some face time with me and those years of experience, and as well as the creativity and everything else that comes with the team. So yeah.
I think I hope you don't mind me describing you this way, but I tend to differentiate graphic designers or designers in general as technically competent versus artists. And so I very much consider you to be an artist, in that the things that you produce, certainly for when we worked together, and again that was like 10 years ago, were beyond what I could have possibly even conceived of. You know, you really took the problems that we set forward and created beautiful responses to that in a design and in a set of designs, and it was super impactful. So yeah, I hope you don't mind me calling you an artist. I'm not sure if everyone would take that as a compliment.
That is a compliment. I went to art school, so that's, I've retained some of my artistic skills. But I think I was thinking about when we did work together and how long ago, obviously way before COVID, and how much it's changed since, and how kind of we're all remote now, or hybrid models. But we did that whole project face to face. We literally came to your office every day of the week for quite a while, and it was very different compared to projects now.
I'm still a great advocate of face to face. I still think that there's something unique about being in the same room, ideally around the same table, drawing on the walls. I still think that there's something, you get something intangible from that. It may just be speed. It may be like speed of communication. I'm not even sure, to be honest. I've not given it enough thought. But you're right. The world has changed a lot. And probably one of the biggest changes that's happened in both of our worlds is AI.
Yeah.
So what, why don't you start by maybe just reflecting on, like, when you first came across AI, what AIs you used, and how you're using AI now?
Yeah, I remember it first coming out and it really just helping us to write, basically. And it's really come a long way since then. We I mean, just to us as a family, we would use it for complaint letters and things like that, stuff like admin things. And we thought, this is amazing how it would just turn kind of a really basic complaint into a really professional one really quickly. And that's got obviously even better and better, but we tend not to use it for that so much anymore. Not as grumpy, but we in the studio, we're using it kind of in every part of the process. And I can start to talk about that if you like, but it's really taken over kind of our it's really changed the way we do our user research. It's even into our discovery process and our kind of ideation process. And you know, like a lot of what we do is it's not just the end design. It's not the graphic designers in their tool of choice, although you know that is a really important part, but it has gone into their process, but it even more so it's kind of in the other part of the process, the creativity, the kind of ideation, all those kind of things as well. So it's revolutionary. I think it's kind of it's making our work faster, but kind of freeing up our time to be able to do other things or to I could give some examples, but I don't know if you've got another question you wanted to follow
Yeah.
up.
No,
Sorry.
I'd love some examples. Like specifically, I'd love to know like maybe a project where I don't know, AI either helped you reduce your timelines or improve the final output. 'Cause you're right? So a lot of AI is just about saving time on that front end, the grunt work at the start and the research bit. But you know, obviously it can go all I don't know if you have this same trend in the UK, but in the Middle East, we've got this trend of AI agencies and they only create AI content. And, you know, because they're so cheap and they can work at volume, they're essentially just commodity. We used to say content is king, right? So now content's a commodity and they've just commoditized content. So, yeah, I'd love to hear about a project where you used AI and which stages in the process that you did.
I also, a bit later, it would be good to talk about the way that we're getting more work that is AI, kind of more like design work around AI, so an AI tool or so our kind of work samples, our case studies are changing as well, which is interesting. It's not just your regular kind of UX flows and your user journeys. It's like designing and building, you know, different chat conversational things and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of the process for user research, and you're probably well aware of all of these things, but we used to spend, you know, days kind of analyzing transcripts, or even in the old days we would get someone in to kind of write the transcript next to us. Now obviously that's transcribed and then analyzed and then grouped into themes for us, and it's really good quality. It's not like we're just using it and missing loads of things. It's like still based on humans, the research, and we do loads of interviews with our users before, even before the actual prototyping stage. We're often speaking, you know, around concepts and things to users or with stakeholders. All of that kind of gets kind of generated and consolidated. And the reason why I hesitated is because we're experimenting with different tools at the moment in each project. So like we'll use Dovetail and use everything that we can do with Dovetail. And then recently we just put all of our research into Notebook LM, Google's Notebook LM, and it enabled us. It actually was revolutionary because it allowed us to have like this hive mind of research that we could go and ask questions. We could, for the first time, we could actually have a conversation with our research. So that obviously produced, I don't know if you've seen it, but it produces like a podcast of of people, two people talking about your research, which was great because other members of the team could go ask questions and we could type things in and you could hear it in an audio. So if you're that way inclined, you prefer to listen to things, you know, quite often with research is like we used to have to go and create these huge PowerPoint documents summarizing the research. And actually now we've sent that podcast to our client and the client loved it. And they heard it on they were on their way to a conference. I think they were going to Davos, and they just listened to it on the plane. And it's like we don't have to do those big presentations. They trust us to source the research, check that it hasn't missed anything crazy. There's still that human element. And then They're quite happy. Clients are changing now as well to listen to the automatic outputs or to the summarizations and that kind of thing. So that's just the research side. And then there's obviously the rest of the process.
Okay, time for a message from this episode's sponsor. At the Impact Lab, we believe in building businesses that truly pack a punch. Businesses with real impact. That's why I'm excited to talk to you about Spartans Boxing Club. More than just a workout, Spartans Boxing has built a powerful brand around discipline and, most importantly, community. They have transformed the fitness space. They're expanding rapidly from their Dubai base and are now seeking passionate franchisees across the GCC. If you're an entrepreneur ready to own a high-energy, proven business with real growth potential, explore Spartans Boxing Club. Their franchisee offers are incredible, so ignite your entrepreneurial journey today. The link is in the show notes. All right, back to the show. Yes, not too dissimilar to what we do in that whenever we are, in terms of our onboarding, obviously we're in a different space. We're in the digital marketing space. But whenever we have a new client, the first part of onboarding is client interviews. And we do interviews with the leadership and the different levels of the organization, you know, because we both know we live in the agency world. There isn't total alignment, and we need to very quickly get to what does success look like for all of the different stakeholder groups. But then we take those transcripts and we create a GPT with it. So that GPT is within the company. And then, like, we're always able to converse with that GPT and say, okay, so wait a minute, what is their primary objective? Why do you believe that? And things like that. So it kind of helps every level of the organization. But I'm interested in, like, a little further down in the chain too.
Yeah.
Like, what about in, you mentioned ideation, right? So how are you using AI in ideation?
So we've used it before to help us prioritize, like because in that example, Notebook kind of knew all of the research, it can give you a first pass at, like, you know, based on all of these needs that you literally have created here, like, what do you think, what order should we tackle this piece of work? And we, in the old days, I can say that, we're of an age, in the old days, we would spend a couple of days organizing those and putting them on the wall and discussing the merits of each and the technical constraints of each. And actually, this just gives you that kind of first step. It just speeds that up a bit, and it allows us to kind of go, you know, this is the priority, and actually these are the evidence points to justify that. Whereas we may not, because client budgets before, we may not have been able to kind of link up individually, you know, the hypotheses with individual product features. Now that's kind of done for us. And we used to do that maybe for the top kind of five, and now you can do that throughout automatically. So that's really, and obviously it also can create ideas for you, which we do, but I still think there's nothing better than, you know, like six creatives in a room coming up with ideas and then using AI to come up with maybe, are there any holes? Are there any bits that we've missed here?
I think that's the kind of hybrid approach that we certainly take. And do you remember Chris Avril? Chris Avril was a We Are Experience.
Yeah.
So I had him on the podcast last week.
I've got a bone to pick with you, actually, just a second, Aziz, because I saw on your LinkedIn that you said he was the single best UX agency you've ever worked with.
Yeah, but, you know, it's my LinkedIn, man. What are you going to do? It's got like it's content with a 24-hour life cycle. And as soon as we launch this podcast, I'm going to say the same thing again. Like,
good.
So we were talking about exactly this, right? So you and me and Chris, we came to AI, or rather AI came to us, and we already had this like foundation of knowledge and experience. And so this was about, it's a superpower, right? It's because it allows you to get all of the stuff that you really don't want to do that's just time consuming, transcribing interviews, organizing notes, all of that stuff, like get it out. And then, you know, it's a sparring partner. You can sit and you can debate with it, and it'll come back and forth with ideas. So one of the challenges I want to try and get some solutions from you around entry level designers and creatives, because I've got this challenge now. You know, I've got one designer in particular, and he is a wonderful artist. He's genuinely wonderful, with an artist temperament, unfortunately. But
I can relate to that.
But he is being sucked into AI, and I worry that he won't develop his own skills. He'll just be a great prompt engineer, or as I affectionately call them, prompt monkeys.
How can
you kind of solve that? How have you solved that?
Yeah, it is a big concern of mine, and with education as well. I worry that people don't really, they won't grow up kind of knowing what good looks like, because I'm sure that the kind of AI engines that create UI interfaces or artwork are obviously going to get better and better, but they're only going to be trained on kind of previous work potentially. And the internet is full of badly looking websites. So will it look at these websites and actually think and recommend things? Like one of our designers the other week was designing with some prompts, and she typed in she wanted to design a woman focused gym, and it came back with lots of stereotypes. It made it really pink. It's that life skill and life knowledge that it doesn't really it had the main image was, even though she asked for a woman focused gym, it created a picture of a man at a desk, for example. So it's still kind of way off where it should be. And I think designers need to, I think even more so now, connect on a human level. Like, we're all addicted to our phones, and instead we need to get out there and stay creative and stay quirky and try and break the mold, be as human as possible, because you need to go and have fun and get that edge, get that dimension to be an amazing creative. And you don't get that kind of chatting away to a prompt. You don't get it just in the old days. The equivalent would be us kind of just using the internet for gathering your reference points. Whereas you remember at school being taught, you need to have multiple sources of your, as for your inspiration. And it's the same now. It's you shouldn't rely on one thing. I think you need the varied interests. I had a conversation the other day about how F1 is kind of using AI. Look in lots of different places and think about how is it using AI, but also just generally have lots of inspiration and talk to lots of people and get out there as much as possible.
Yeah, I love that. I think that I completely agree as well. I think that connecting on a human level, what you said, is kind of, I feel like we're going to come full circle with marketing. I've got this course coming out and it's basically around human marketing. I feel like we're going to get to the point where marketing is essentially, look, as marketers, we are just brilliant at ruining channels. It's our specialty. Yeah. Email came out and we were like, right, what can we do with this? Let's send 100,000 emails to people we don't know. And then they had to create spam filters. And then Facebook came out and we're like, oh, this is awesome. Let's just post all of our blogs. In fact, let's just post them 10 times. Then they had to come out with the Edge algorithm. We are awesome at taking channels and ruining them. And we are doing already the same with AI. The thing with marketing is that it keeps evolving, right? So it evolves past the challenge, and the next evolution is human marketing, right? Which is ironic because it's kind of like 18th century marketing. It's back to human interaction. But I loved what you said then about, my wife uses this term. She says, I need to go to Dubai or wherever. She needs to get out of where we live to clean her eyes. And what she means by that is she needs to be exposed to beauty, beautiful scenery, beautiful architecture. She needs to have that exposure because that fuels her own creativity. And she uses the term clear her eyes. But I think maybe one thing AI will never replace is just taste, right? I mean, you've got incredible taste. And how can an AI ever really replicate that?
Yeah, I think it's what worries me about kind of grads as well. If there's someone new that comes to Furthermore, really it's about your stories that we find interesting. It's like, what did you do at the weekend? What do you listen to? Who did you see? Like, what area did you go to? Like, did you see this exhibition? Did you go and eat here, or, you know, sat by the river or under a tree? Like, just tell us those things. And you would, without a doubt, kind of stay in your job longer if you just connect with your team, you know, multiple different perspectives and things like that. It's really important, I think, because some of these skills can, you know, the skills can be taught. But designers have had to evolve so many different times anyway, I think, you know, from all of these tools. And now, even before AI, in say Figma, our designers are having, you know, like all the auto, they're having to actually think more like developers than ever before. Like when I first started out, we were even told, you know, don't worry about the grid until later on in the process. Now the grid, you can't create anything in Figma unless it's like on an auto layout, snap grid doing this. And it, even that worries me that people are going to miss that kind of time to be creative. That, and if AI takes that away, it's like, what do they ultimately are? Just kind of moving things around grids, training the AI on their company's design system. And then it's kind of what is their job title? It's not really a designer anymore. It's like a prompt engineer or something.
Prompt monkey.
Prompt monkey, yeah.
I think that I agree. I think that that's the real challenge, right? And I think that the other side of that challenge is that, I don't know if this is true, but it's certainly true of my experience, that most of the real artists that I've met in my career are introverts. And AI is like a godsend for true introverts, because they get to do all of this stuff without actually engaging with real people. And yeah. I don't know, man, how do I get them out of that mold? How do I get them, like, what behaviors do you have when you guys are like hybrid, right? So you kind of occasionally in the office together.
Yeah.
So what kind of like daily habits or daily behaviors do you guys employ that drives that interconnectivity between the individuals?
Yeah, it's a good question. Two things, really. We obviously have a stand up every morning, but half the team sometimes, well, there's very only a couple of times a year are we all together, but we'll have a daily stand up. But most of that is just us talking about, like, keep it fun, like talking about our day, our weekend, what we saw on TV, like what's the latest thing in the cinema, things like that, really, because it sparks off ideas and conversations. And I don't think, for example, the app that we created, the walking app, wouldn't have come around, and it's successful in its own right now, making its own money, which is brilliant. But like, that wouldn't have come around if we wouldn't have been having those general kind of office chats about people's desire to get outside more and that kind of thing. So there's that. Then we have design parties where the designers get together and, well, we all get together actually, and but it's designer led, and it would be just crazy tasks. It might be something like, imagine yourself as a sandwich, draw you as a sandwich, and why each layer is kind of something to do with your personality, or create a bento box of a new product, but kind of design it in a bento box. So kind of quick skills that only, you know, you'd be able to do. Your, you know, your ideas just come free flowing, and everyone has to design, and it's that kind of stuff that you would do, you take for granted now that we're all kind of hybrid working. In the old days, we would do it more, I think, but you have to be strict and make sure you keep that up. The other thing that gets lost when you're not all together is like the shared experience with music. So you're listening to everyone gets a turn, or we used to kind of each take, like, build a playlist together, which you can't really do now, but you can get it in Spotify, and we might have our Furthermore playlist that people could listen to if they like. So it's trying to remember those things that bring you together. Yeah, and then we have a kind of healthy training budget. We get people to go out, attend events, or just they might want to do some training, or but ideally face to face. We do encourage that, but so many of the good things now are online. So I think some aspects are good, and yeah.
Yeah, I think there's obviously there's a lot of benefit to online. I worry, so I do this training with this local, well, they're not local actually, they're national. It's part of the, it's a government initiative. The government in Egypt does some awesome stuff, right? And one of the things they do is they've got this thing called ITI, where they take grads and then they put them through this, it's sort of scholarship program, and they put them through work training, if you like, in digital skills. Like one of my biggest gripes has always been that people are coming out of university and they're just not ready for work. They're ready for academia, but they're not actually ready for work. And this kind of solves that problem. And so I still do sort of sessions with those kids when they come out, when they come around to our city. And I worry that the graphic designers and the artists in particular are in too much of a hurry to integrate AI in their workflows, and not enough in a hurry to just be curious and explore art. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. I think there's so much out there. I think it's lazy basically. Like you can just ask it whatever you want and not have to move, and probably still if as bosses, you could probably make an attempt. They can make an attempt to impress you, but I think it's up to us or more senior people to sort of realize when they haven't kind of taken a wider view of things and looked elsewhere for inspiration. And I do think it's obvious to spot. I'm not, but that's not set to say that AI is like a terrible thing. It's brilliant in so many things. It's like, does it need to take away that creativity aspect? And we down in the design, I didn't really get to the end, but the down at the design stage, we do use AI to kind of populate our designs with images because it's quick. It's always been a nightmare to look for images. So if it's a mock-up for a client, we can just fill it with images really quickly, and then you can tweak it really quickly, and that's amazing. And some of the skills that designers used to have, like cutting out a photo and spending hours at what good looks like for that, and being told by your boss that's not great, like you've missed a bit of the hair. That's all gone because you can just do that with AI. And I think maybe that's the worry. It's like if you take away some of these small bits of craft that the juniors typically did, how will they get to that kind of next step if they haven't experienced the entry-level things because AI is taking that away?
100% agree, and that is actually the thing that I'm
Skills
kind of
loss.
I'm railing against is this. I call it foundational knowledge and foundational skills, right? So, like, if you're not building the foundational knowledge, you've got no way to build the foundational skills. So, the foundational knowledge would be to recognize when something needs to be cut out of an image, and the foundational skill would be to immaculately cut that out. Without leaving any residues. And if you're not building both of those things early in your career, I worry that essentially what you think is happening is that AI is making your job easier, but what it's actually doing is it's reducing your own ability to grow your own skill set. And that's the thing that sort of concerns me. It concerns me most. I feel like people in our generation, because we've lived through the three revolutions, right? The pre-internet, then we had the internet, and then now we've got the AI, and we've lived through all three. We are dexterous by genetics, if you like. Whereas the kind of new generation, they don't really remember a working world without AI now. Like grads are coming through, and their first response to any problem is to ask AI, and that worries me.
Yeah, it's like one of my designers said the other day, "Oh yeah, we don't name layers anymore." I was like, "Oh, what do you mean we don't name layers anymore?" It's showing my age. So yeah, AI just writes all the names of the layers. It knows whether it's a navigation, whether it's a search box. And in Figma, it would we used to get told off by our design directors in my first job, being like, you need to name these layers so people can understand them later on. And now they don't need to do that. And it's like, well, fine, AI has named it, but it gave us, as we were naming them, time, brain space to think, actually, this is nested within this element, and this is nested within this. This is how this might work. And actually, the hero, and actually, we had to think about what the best names were for these things. And those names have stuck kind of years after the hero and the mega nav and all of those things. The burger menu all came from people naming layers, probably. And now it's like AI is going to generate that for you. So you're not really going to be able to spot when it's made the mistake because you haven't got the foundation.
And totally. And let's take the burger menu as an example, right? So ultimately, someone at some point, they looked at those three lines and said, okay, let's just call that the burger menu. And they probably thought that's my temporary name. And then it stuck. Yeah. But here's the point. A person did that. An AI can't, like, a person innovated that menu. And as things stand, you said it before, like, AI is just an amalgamation of human experience. That's all it is. That happens to be online. And depending on which section of online depends on the AI, as we saw with Grok and its anti-Semitic rants over the last week.
Oh, God.
So, you know, there is this, and I think you guys are right on the forefront of this space, which is we still need to protect and develop the creative mindset because that's where genuine innovation comes from. So, how are you guys like balancing? You know, at what point are you saying to your new employees, yeah, no, that's not an AI task, that's a human task, crack on?
It's a good question. I think they just follow our example. I think that they're not like where they see us using AI in brainstorms or using it to summarize things, or they understand that that's okay. I think where it's not okay still is where we've tried to use it to kind of create complete designs and UI designs. And even if you like feed it wireframes and say design this, it's never good. It's like full of rounded corners, and it's just, you know, you have to spend more time. If the prompt engineering is taking longer than just kind of moving things around, then it's a waste of your time. And I think maybe we're old fashioned, but we're still sticking to that kind of craft and moving things around rather than use it, just keep trying to prompt engineer it. So I think, yeah, they just follow example, really.
That's the danger, right? Is that maybe we are old-fashioned. Like I think about that a lot. Everyone in every craft, they rail against change. You know, change is the biggest fear of most people. And so, and I'm not, I don't think I am that. I think what we're identifying, and I think it's the unique year that we were born, right? It's just when we were born, it's a consequence of that. We've seen these changes happen. I think what we're seeing is a real issue that, you know, grads are coming out of university into a workplace that isn't helping them build their own skill sets. And it doesn't matter not right now because they're entry level, right? But then they're going to get promoted and they're going to be found wanting. If you don't have that like foundational knowledge and those foundational skills, you're going to be found wanting. And I feel they're the ones who are going to struggle, kind of like not us. We innately saw AI and thought, oh my God, I'm going to save so much time doing this transcript or writing these show notes or whatever it is. Whereas we have this same issue now. So like what we used to do is we used to have people come in and ideate with AI, and I realized I'm not helping them at all. So now they're not even allowed to use AI in the first 3 months. They have to write posts. They have to understand the basics of copywriting. They don't have to be great copywriters, but they have to understand the basics of layering a story and copy and what a call to action should look like and how you should open and how to write hooks by yourself. You have to go and research competitors by yourself just to try and build those foundational skills.
Yeah, I have a friend in fashion, and she works for a high street brand in accessories and design, and her bosses have said you must use AI to create your inspiration. So where we would go off and, or in the past, maybe she would go off and go to like an antiques fair or go to Milan and look at the markets and things like that. Now it's, could you generate these pictures automatically with Midjourney or whatever tool it was? But it's obviously a cost-cutting exercise, but they might shoot themselves in the foot because eventually there'll be people who don't really kind of know the old way of doing things, and it just ends up making everything look the same. Or maybe it's just us worrying, and maybe it will all be fine.
I had like a really similar experience just a couple of days ago. Our head of creative asked one of the team to create a mood board with AI. It was, with a good prompt, and it creates a perfectly good mood board. And I sat and I wondered about that, and I thought, what is she losing? And I kind of felt like, again, it's so intangible. I felt like the process of having to scroll through Pinterest to create this mood board, just that process alone adds something to the final experience, but I can't put my finger on it. I can't say this is the thing that it does, and so it becomes really difficult to articulate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it's just being able to move things and put them in groups and next to things, and be able to tell that story. Like again, when I was kind of younger, our art directors would tell us how important telling the story is, and how you would kind of play things back to people. And I think that's still an important skill that people, need to keep hold of. But then sometimes, like we're designing a tool at the moment that is helping kind of nonprofits to really get the most out of their data that they hold. So they hold all this data, but they don't have the skill sets in-house to kind of to really utilize it. So we're creating almost like a prompt builder for them. So you could type, you don't have to type, like think about what the prompt's going to be. Actually, you could just say, I operate in Africa. I'm looking for about financial inclusion of women in rural communities. You press these things, and then you might type a little bit about your problem in detail, choose some of the problems you've got from a menu. So it's more like a human interface that people are used to. And it generates the prompts for then you to then, and the follow-up prompts for you to then take to your chat of choice. So, Gemini or GPT or Copilot or something. I do see a few clients coming through where they want AI embedded in their app or their website or their platform. But they still don't realize until we prove it with the with user research that most people find a prompt box a bit scary, a bit fear-inducing. It's like, I don't know what to type in here. I don't know. No one's taught me how to write amazing prompts. And actually, I hear all these blog posts and all this noise online, but none of it makes sense to me. I'm not that way inclined. But actually, I quite like pressing a few buttons. Getting a prompt, copying it and pasting it into that of my choice. So that, and I think some scenarios, like if people haven't got data scientists, but you could write a prompt and GPT could know there's this really great public data source that you should be using. Why are you not using this? Or have you thought about linking up with this charity who's sourcing all of this data on this thing? So it is helping people in other ways, I think. And it's helping us to get new work because people want all these things now that they didn't want before. But I don't think it's going to be replacing the creativity of UI design. But I mean, I say that, and then you look at what it's doing in movies and photography. It is scary on that side, but I can't see it coming for the core design skills yet, maybe.
I don't, I agree. I don't think it has the ability. I don't think this iteration, because there's an end point to this iteration, right? So I don't think this iteration of AI can create, right? Because I don't want to say it's a glorified cut and paste, but that's what I mean. And I'm not anti-AI. I use AI literally all the time. I'm anti being dumb. That's what I'm anti. I'm anti spending 4 years at university and then coming out and not building any other skills, as though that's it. That's kind of your career. And over the last couple of years, you'll have seen obviously a massive evolution in your own company in terms of the skill sets that that you require of your team and new people joining your team. What do you think are going to be the broader implications of AI in, let's say, the design sphere in its totality, industrial design all the way through to you know, UX design?
I do think that people will, that designers will have to have a kind of, well, obviously a foundational knowledge of what, because it will touch every industry, you know, from physical product design and architecture and all the subjects that were taught when I was at school. I can imagine at universities, or I'd hope that there would be kind of a parallel track of this is how you're going to use like the latest technology. And you mentioned Chris actually, and his startup with his isn't he starting a whole company just using AI, which is amazing. And I think people need to be taught at universities that if you do want to get something to market quickly and you've got a particular niche or an idea or something, you can do it. Whereas before it was like, okay, I need to hire this company and I need to do this. And I think there'll be a lot more entrepreneurs and people just maybe going it alone or creating their own product or noticing those gaps in the market. And society is just way more global since COVID. So it's kind of the perfect point where, you know, one day I'm working with people on the West Coast, and then I'm working people in the Gulf, and, you know, all different places, which means there's so much opportunity to find your niche and realize its potential and kind of get it out there quickly before anyone else does. It's just kind of whatever your discipline, making sure you've got this entrepreneurial kind of track, and as part of that is like the amazing things that AI could do to, because if you don't learn it, everyone else is going to, and I think you'll be left behind.
I think so too. I wonder though, because AI is essentially this iteration of it, I differentiate between this iteration of AI and artificial general intelligence, and I tend to think like this iteration of AI is a reflection of human consciousness, and artificial general intelligence will be its own consciousness. And so it's difficult to predict what that will be like, because
we'll have to do this podcast again in about probably 3 years time.
Probably. They keep bringing it forward. It was 2050, then 2040, 2030, and now people are saying we're 2 years away. I'm like, oh my god, it's crazy. But anyway, so this iteration of AI is a reflection of human consciousness, if you like, and human endeavor and human work. Do you think that creates in the design space? Do you think that creates like a risk of just samey content all the time?
Yeah, I think AI has, for example, got it in its mind that everything should be rounded corners with, you know, like there's things that I don't know how it's learning kind of what's current. I guess it must look at certain websites, but every design that you create, it's like very similar every time. Like we asked it to create a dashboard the other day with some charts in it. And then, you know, a few days later you do the same. It's like the same chart, the same style. And it's like, actually, you know, could that story be better told in a different type of chart, with a different type of styling? Or, you know, maybe not a chart at all. Maybe it's just a big stat. You know, it's not going to ever think outside the box at the moment. There's a risk that it all just looks the same.
I think I've seen that film before. All right, Steve, you've been awesome. I'm going to ask you one last question and say free. So we both have kids, and one of mine is she's just a couple of years away, maybe a little less than that, from going to university. So
where's the time gone?
Where has the time gone, right? So if you didn't study art at university, what would you have studied and why?
I secretly always wanted to be some kind of architect. I wanted to build things. And I think that was because I was addicted to like SimCity, Civilization, Settlers, like all those games. And then I got to university and it was like, oh, you're going to have to study for 7 years. And I was like, oh, and I kind of, it's a regret, really. I always would have liked to have been an architect. And I think even with AI, it's probably completely changing that industry, but there'll always be a need for, in fact, AI will kind of supercharge what's possible probably in architecture. So yeah, that's what I would do. It's an exciting space.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Steve. People are going to be you've been super insightful. You're going to help a lot of people out in your industry, actually, in the GCC region, to help sort of build their careers and not be too reliant just on the technology. I really appreciate your time, mate, and it has been wonderful catching up. Thank you.
So nice to see you. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Before you go, I just want 30 more seconds of your time. Firstly, thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps getting exposure to the podcast for other people. We only do this stuff for you, so please do take a moment to leave a review. If you are interested in our digital marketing agency, Cush Digital, you can go to cush.digital and hit the contact form and we'll get right back to you. The Impact Lab has a free course on the website called The Prompt Monkey Problem. So if you think that you are in that category of people who are using AI too much and not necessarily building foundational skills or foundational knowledge, go to theimpactlab.store and you can sign up for the course entirely free, no catch, no credit card, nothing. Just jump in, do the course, get your certificate, and then start building your own foundational knowledge in marketing. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you at the next episode.